Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there. Welcome to the show. It's brought to you with Levi Solicitors. That 10% discount can be yours at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. My name's Dan Moylan. Hello. Michael Normanton's with me.
Hello.
So is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
If you like what we do and you want to support us, have a look at TSB Plus. Might tickle your fancy. You get access to every digital copy of the mag that we've done since 2009, right up to the most recent one. And we've got one more this season.
Issue 8 will be out. We may even be able to sell some copies of it at the West Brom match. Imagine that. That tunnel will once more have an occupant.
I don't think I want to be handing out mucky 50 pence pieces. It doesn't feel very pandemic friendly, but we'll see.
We'll just put the price up. We don't have to give any change. It's £10 exact change only.
You also get all our podcasts ad-free as part of TSB Plus. Priority access to the Match Ball and our exclusive subscriber-only podcast, The Extra Ball, this week reliving when George Graham walked out on us for Spurs, the bastard. Daily email with essential Leeds United news from Moscow, discounts on our merch, and it's all at thesquareball.net/plus. Quick word about our merch, if we may. We've got an exciting link up coming with another company.
A collab. And it's going to drop.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing.
Is it a sick collab or is it a good one?
It is actually a sick collab. That is 100% correct.
Well, keep your eyes peeled for that on socials and via email as well. There will be a priority ordering period for our TSB Plus subscribers on the new clobber that we are releasing. And it's not just clobber. I think we're doing mugs as well to go with it.
There's always a mug.
Enough with that selling. Right, let's get into the football and the latest news from Elland Road. Podcast Pat has apparently signed a new contract.
With Spotify.
That's what it might be. This one-year extension might be a deal where they've added into his terms, you have to present a weekly podcast for us.
It is a big undertaking. They did, I think he was only 20 minutes this week, so they may be struggling to fit him in. Because he's got a busy schedule of pounding footballs into Marcelo Bielsa's face for no reason. But yeah, one more year of Bamalang.
And this seems to have come from David Ornstein at The Athletic, who's been trawling through the Football Association's intermediary transactions list, which was published in March, and it covers February 20 to February 21. And that's a year, not one day. And it shows an updated registration for Bamford, a year extension. So, I mean, that's about the extent of the story that we know, isn't it? So
I'm guessing this was something that the club just had a right to trigger and we've just done it. And there's going to be a new deal in addition to this, probably. It feels like this is just something that's happened under the radar and they've almost just done a bit of paperwork to get this sorted.
Yeah, there was some more in the Evening Post with Graham Smith, but he didn't really make anything clearer. Said that his contract would be renewed as part of the review period at the end of the season when they sort out whether, you know, Stuart Dallas is in line for a new deal at some point. Tyler Roberts will have a year to go, and Alioski needs sorting out. So Bamford was kind of wrapped up in that, but he didn't make it clear whether there'll be, like, he'll get another 6-year contract at that point or if they'll just announce whatever this was then. But he ain't for sale, and that's the long and short of it. They're only, contracts are only worth the paper they're written on, aren't they?
You can see how stories spin out of this, though, because the original Athletic article said that this ties him to the club. We're unlikely to sell him. Some, like Liverpool, have said they like, Jurgen Klopp said some nice things about him. That then turned into about a dozen other websites reporting that Liverpool wanted to sign Pat Bamford. And you think, well, that's not really what it said. It said that Jurgen Klopp once said some nice things about him.
That gets the clicks, though, doesn't it? Which striker, Premier League lead striker, interesting German manager on Merseyside? Ooh, I wonder what this is all about. And then you realise it's all nonsense.
Who are we going to steal from West Brom and Fulham? Because they're down. Those losers are out of this division. Two of the clubs that came up with us have gone down with another loser club, Sheffield United.
Kyle Bartley.
Get him in the end.
Yeah.
There's been a little bit of talk of Pereira. Would you take Pereira?
I was wondering about Pereira because my problem with him is that I feel like it'll push poor Ian down the pecking order. And I've quite enjoyed seeing Pereira's little cameo appearances.
But he is pals with Rafinha because they go back to their Sporting Lisbon days, don't they, together. So if it keeps him away from the clutches of that filthy animal Bruno Fernandes trying to poach him over the Pennines.
Well, I was wondering if it go the other way. We'll take Fernandes over here. About time we had somebody coming in that direction. He could be the new Strachan, the Portuguese Strachan.
What do you think about West Brom and Fulham going down? It's funny, isn't it? I mean, you laugh at whoever gets relegated in any given season, but it's nice when it's not us. Let's just say that for a start. And it puts context on our season. We've been great.
It's nice to have some daylight between us now. It felt like we had to spend far too long in the same league worrying about them. Not our problem anymore.
Sheffield United's relegation is by far the funniest. This is the most reassuring. And Fulham as well have had that advantage of having been up before and down before. They're supposed to be past this yo-yo stage, but they can't break it. It will be interesting to see what happens to them next season and what happens to Norwich and who else has come up already, Watford, whether they just go straight down. Because that ain't healthy. If we're just going to have the same three or four teams at the bottom swapping every season, that doesn't seem like a way to go. But then the flip side of that is, do I want Norwich to stay up? No, because of what they did to Luciano Becchio. So it's a very, it's a complicated situation.
I feel like I used to quite like West Brom, and then they got Allardyce as manager and it instantly made me think, oh, I kind of hope you go down now.
That game that confirmed their relegation, who beat them? I can't remember. But, they beat Newcastle, didn't they? Did they beat Newcastle? What happened?
I think they lost to Arsenal, didn't they, and went down.
That's it. They lost to Arsenal. And I watched the highlights of that, but I was very half awake. But there was a point, Pereira scored a great goal in that where he ran through and it was an individual effort. And they cut to Sam Allardyce on the sidelines for this consolation goal with a big grin on his face, laughing as well. That were a good goal, wasn't it? As if he was just like, well, I can say in the post-match press conference that I told him what to do.
You were just on the verge of doing Warnock then.
Well, Allardyce is just the Premier League Warnock, isn't he? He's the Warnock that gets bigger jobs for no reason. It was a toss-up which one of them got the England manager's job and a toss-up as to which one of them would lose it for those reasons. Is that legally?
Yeah, fine.
I feel like I'm impugning Neil Warnock's integrity for a job he never had and never will get.
Either way, back to Allardyce. Did you see the still employed tactic of trying to make it sound like he was a bit unlucky or he'd done a great job or he just didn't quite have enough time? Or as we call it, Frank Lampard syndrome.
Yes, Match of the Day did some nice work for him, didn't they, by pointing out that if you only look at the middle bit of his managerial time at West Brom, he's actually done really well. So in a way, doesn't that mean they should stay up and that Big Sam's still dead good? I mean, the fact they got like 2 points from his first 20 games or something stupid and they conceded fucking loads of goals and hardly scored any, that bit wasn't his fault.
Well, listen, Michael, if you only examine Howard Wilkinson from 1991 to 1992, he wins the league every year.
It's very true. And I mean, yeah, the period they showed for Allardyce was showing that he has improved. But then they could have then looked at his last four games where I think he's got like 2 points or 1 point or something and then said he was shit again. But instead, it seems like Allardyce and Parker as well, to an extent, neither of them have faced any criticism this year, despite the fact they've been wretched.
Do you know why? It's because they're English. It is. There is that ridiculous inherent bias for English managers.
And there's the discussion of Parker yesterday. I mean, I've nothing against Parker. I know we've taken the piss of the way he dresses and stuff and some of the stuff with times he's got a bit shirty with us saying it leads playing scripted ways and what have you. But on Monday Night Football yesterday, they were basically all sympathetic towards him. If a foreign manager had managed to get a team relegated with,
twice.
Well, yeah, twice actually. Yeah, and then limped out of the championship having had such a good squad to work with, I think he would have got quite a bit of criticism for it. Because while they have sometimes looked all right this season for them, they've hardly won.
That squad was good enough to get out of the championship in better style than it did, and it had enough about it to stay in the Premier League in better style than it did. It's not even like these have gone to the final day or anything, isn't it? Some kind of record that there's still three games left and relegation is already sorted, hasn't happened for years, means there haven't been teams this bad in the Premier League for years. We mentioned on the propaganda episode the stat about Burnley having scored more goals than Fulham at Craven Cottage in 2021. Their record all season, they've scored 9 at home. With Mitrovic.
Ridiculous, isn't it?
And it's, I know he's not played every game, and there's some, you know, I don't know why he's somehow not
unpopular. The reason he's not playing is because they've bought Luckman and Josh Maja, so they've got loads more strikers.
So why haven't they scored more than 9 goals at their own ground?
I think it's because they're shit.
The bottom three have won the same number of games as us, and there's 3 of them.
We would have given our right arm to have Mitrovic in our side if you go back 12, 18 months, something like that, 2 years, and now look at him and look at us.
You get more, it's what you get out of the players, and that's where we've all seen it with the Bielsa factor. And I saw it being mentioned again about Ryan Mason when he said, you know, oh, obviously Leeds are one of the fittest teams in the league, so it's always a big challenge. And it was, I remember it was Aston Villa fans, I think, we had on propaganda who were amazed at how fit Leeds United's players were. It was being discussed about Mason. Why don't you just make Spurs players fitter? You know, Gareth Bale is quite a good physical specimen. I'm sure he can get in the gym, get a bit stronger, and he might play a bit better. But instead, there seems to be just this attitude amongst everyone who isn't Marcelo Bielsa that they just go, well, I mean, Leeds United's fitness, can't compete with that, can you? I mean, you can. You could try.
Did you see the clipping of the article that said Philip Cocu tried to get them to do that at Derby and the players
and it's killed them.
The players were all knackered and that's why they couldn't do anything. Whether he's tried to implement murder ball and not done the physical conditioning beforehand or something like that.
Oh, but still said you can go out 4 nights a week.
I think it was because they'd come off of the end of last season. The report said it was after they saw the way our players ran them off the pitch drunk. They said, well, that's what we need to do. But there wasn't
enough. Was it that their players ran them off the road drunk?
It was. But the problem was there wasn't the time from the end of last season to the start of this one because of the pandemic to get a proper pre-season in. And I was thinking about that the other day. That I can't remember. There was brief highlights of like a couple of behind closed doors matches, but we didn't have a usual pre-season where there were any friendlies. And other clubs I was aware of playing friendlies. So we managed to get to this level of fitness without playing any pre-season friendlies. And maybe it is just what Marcelo Bielsa is. Everybody talks about his tactics and how innovative that is and the marking and how exciting it is on the pitch. But his ability to improve the physical condition of the players that he has sometimes gets underrated and seems to be the one thing that opposition managers, they just look on and go, well, yeah, we're going to get outrun by Leeds, whatever we do.
I was looking at in the build-up to the game, or it was maybe after it, I can't remember, that Derby put out a tweet with a Wayne Rooney quote on it, and it was trying to paint a picture of Curtis Davis as being heroic for them, saying how he played through injury, basically. But the way it came across was Wayne Rooney saying, he's not at all fit, he's not trained in weeks, but I thought he did well. And it's like, yeah, well, maybe you need to play players who were in slightly better physical shape and maybe you won't be in this problem. But anyway,
I mean, we have moved now seamlessly into the bottom of the Championship from the bottom of the Premier League, and I was just watching Martin Waghorn on who hasn't stopped talking since full time.
He's living a boyhood dream, Moscow. Don't you shit on his dreams.
Saying that Wayne Rooney was crucial in their survival because he's got that winning mentality. Them staying up.
Just for the record, how many games did they win in the last 15? Was it one?
Yes, and then they stayed up because, I mean, it's an absolute disgrace, the whole thing.
It's not, it's funny.
I know, but I feel, because I was writing me Yorkshire Evening Post column about this, so I looked into it in more detail. Actually, I was writing about Tom Lees, bless him. He deserves better than this, basically. Rotherham beat both Sheffield Wednesday and Derby home and away this season. And when you compare Rotherham's budget, they spend nothing because they don't have anything, which is the principle of FFP, which is why all this whinging about whether Derby should be punished, should Sheffield Wednesday have had their points deduction, when you compare it to Rotherham, there's never a question of them breaking FFP because they just stick, they spend the money that they've got, they get the players that they can afford. You know, their physio as was, is now their manager, doing his best. He described, he was hilarious, in tears at the end of the game. He said he wanted those players to be cemented as the gods of Rotherham United, but it had been denied them by Mick McCarthy, who was just kind of like, hey, well, yeah, sorry about that. They do everything right and get and even beat the teams who stay in the division instead of them. It's incredibly unfair. And I know that if Derby do get relegated by desk, in Bielsa's phrase, that I think it was his phrase, and it was the Spanish for behind closed doors, promotions and relegations. Relegation by desk. Wickham get rescued. Keep Rotherham up.
What about keeping up Rotherham and Wickham and relegating Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, and can we pick one that maybe we don't want in there anymore?
I don't even know who's in the...
Get rid of Millwall. Get them further away. And
yeah,
I know they're like nice. I know they were kind of firmly mid-table this year, but I'd just feel a bit better if they were.
You've also got the option to send Huddersfield closer to their natural home.
They'll get there eventually. Huddersfield will find their way down there soon. They've got a shit owner now and no money.
They are the next one up in the table, so if you wanted to play by the rules properly.
Michael made a good point, actually, earlier about the...
Did he?
Yeah. Not on the podcast, obviously, because he just talks rubbish on this, but before we started, about how... Derby County being relegated by desk would be funny, particularly after Martin Waghorn's kind of glory tour and all the parties in the car park and stuff. But making them start next season with a big points deduction might be even better, because part of, I think, the celebrations, and we celebrated when we stayed up against Arsenal, Mark Viduka scored that goal, but we won the game, which, you know, is a crucial difference. We saved ourselves. Part of the celebration, I think, is the idea, well, you know, Wayne Rooney will stay next season and we'll get some more players in, we'll get some good loans, he can attract some players and we'll have a go at promotion next season.
Eric Alonso's promised £20 million footballers.
So all that stuff goes away if they start next season in the Championship on minus 12. And even if they go into League One, the risk with League One, and I was saying this in the lead up to the game, is that they get relegated and they can have a good season in League One. It's quite easy to reset, get youth players and win all your games and come back up. Even when we started on minus 15 in League One, you know, we finished in the playoffs and nearly went up. So really the perfect thing is to keep them in a division that they're not good enough to be in, with a points deduction that means they have no hope of getting promoted, and that it is another year of relegation battle guaranteed. That's the way forward.
Or we deduct them maybe 2 points this year, and then 15 next year. Just so they've not been punished too much this year. It's only 2 points, lads.
You're right, but also Moscow is right, that I enjoy the hopelessness of their position. And a couple of Derby fans waded in on Twitter about this when I had the temerity to tweet out about what the appeal that the EFL have succeeded, apparently, in getting with the disciplinary panel. The appeal was upheld. But a couple have waded in when I tweeted about that. And actually, just remind them, you're hopeless. You either go down this season or next season's rubbish. And you'll, I mean, because I was annoyed when Sheffield Wednesday had their points deduction kicked into the following season. Actually, it's been worth it, hasn't it? Long game payoff.
And it's just meant another year of them with Chancery, just another year racking up more debt, getting more and more screwed, churning over more managers who you have to pay off. It's going to be nice for them next year.
Hey, speaking of football twats, the European Super League clubs have now come crawling back with their tails between their legs. I guess the punishment on this, everybody wants to see them punished. But it's a balancing act, isn't it, in that you need to punish them, but you don't want to upset them too much because they are still your golden goose to a certain extent, minus Spurs. Premier League, it'll be interesting to get the take of Angus Kinnear. You know, we're speaking to Angus Kinnear on this week's Phil Hay Show, just to take the temperature of this one and find out from him what the view is within the club about the so-called Big Six from the other 14. And also what the wider view is in the Premier League about punishing them. Is there genuinely a will to do it?
I mean, UEFA have handed them the most minuscule of fines, haven't they? They've said, you can give a bit of money to charity, is what they've more or less said, and it'll all be fine. So, yeah, they've had to pay like 15 million quid between all of them or something. It's a pathetic amount of money. I mean,
they didn't actually do much wrong when you actually look at what happened. They didn't actually break away. They just said they were going to break away. And I know they signed the legal documentation, so you could argue that was them breaking away, but you wonder how much of it was testing the water.
Nah, I still think they should fuck them up, to be honest, but never mind. It was always going to happen because...
But they won't, devalue their own competition.
You're essentially in danger of setting fire to your most valuable asset, aren't you, if you piss them off too much, which is where the Premier League are as well, I suppose.
Yeah, there's the detail, and I'm not sure how this works out, where they say that if they seek to join, an unauthorized competition in the future, they will be fined 100 million euros, which feels a bit like, well, that's the price to leave. But there's got to be more behind that. It can't just be, if you try to do this again, you get fined 100 million pounds or euros, but you can go. It must be backed by some kind of sanctions.
Is it twin legislation? This is what I wonder, where the domestic leagues also then legislate. Because I think they've done it in Italy already, haven't they? Whereas they do it in the Premier League and say, okay, you do that, you sign up to an unsanctioned competition and you forfeit your right to this.
Yeah.
So that's the price of leaving, but you've got nothing else if you do go and do that.
Which is the curiosity around why Madrid and Barcelona and Juventus are still all for this. I saw some mad speculation about whether they're trying to found some franchise teams, get New York to have a team and have a team in Shanghai and create their own league that way.
Global League.
Which would be interesting. But it would, at least it would probably have fewer repercussions for our end of things, which was always the problem. And that's where the balance of power is quite difficult, because you want to punish Liverpool, for example, but remember how excited we were about playing Liverpool in the first game of the season. So you don't want to do it to the extent that, there's something that affects things. But the balance of power, and I think that would be what would be interesting to ask Angus Kinnear about, is where is the balance of power behind the scenes now? Because it seemed like bumping these six to the curb and giving more decision making to the other 14 is a good start. And I mean, when it comes to decision making, look at fucking Joel Glazer's hair. Can he be trusted to decide anything? Somebody who goes into, he probably invites a barber round, doesn't he? And say, do what you want. Just make sure that there is a little curtain of hair hanging over my neck
even
from the bottom of my skull.
Even though I am allowed near schools, make it look like I'm not allowed. He is allowed near schools. I did
nothing
state
to
that
stop
clearly.
Him. Yeah, he has the character of a fine person. There's nothing to say. It's just his decisions do not always reflect him at his best.
Well phrased all round there. Everyone negotiated that one very carefully and skillfully. And let's return to our own affairs very briefly then at this point and look at transfer rumours. Now, quite apart from Conor Gallagher, who's the lad from Chelsea, who's on loan at Losers West Brom, are we only allowed now to go in for players who have names of four letters or shorter? Because everyone we've been linked with this week, apart from Gallagher, fulfills this criteria. Josh Doig, 18-year-old left back from Hibs. Noah Lang, 21-year-old kid from Club Bruges. He's the winger, isn't he? But he's currently on loan from Ajax, but going to Bruges, so they might make an instant profit on him. And Loic Bardet?
Bardet. Yeah. Why not?
Like Sardé.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. 21-year-old centre-back from Lyon. Leeds had a scout, Gabby Ruiz there at the Lyon versus Lille game.
I think we should sign all of them. Everyone we're linked with this summer, just buy all of them. See where it gets us.
It'd save a lot of time. Not necessarily money. We signed Olivier Ducour from Lyon, so there's some pedigree.
Noah Lang does look really, really good on YouTube as well. I mean, from my YouTube research of all of these players, Lang is the one I would go for.
And it'll mean a season of arc puns, wouldn't it?
True. And also you've got Clubber Lang, who's the Rocky character as well.
You have the benefit of two of every animal if we sign Noah, so it's a big benefit. We just need a big place to put them all.
You need a bigger boat.
We do.
If ever you want a handle on what Newcastle fans have been suffering, enduring, putting up with in recent times, just go and have a read of George Culkin's match report from the Leeds versus Spurs game at the weekend, because he's normally The Athletic's Newcastle reporter and he's been sent away to cover Phil. Go on, George, you just go watch this game, see what you make of it. And George has had a bloody nice time, hasn't he?
Maybe all Newcastle fans should do this. We should be allowed a little holiday. So it's not, we'll overlook the rules about supporting other teams, and because everyone, football fans know you're not allowed to change, but maybe they deserve a little break.
Because George has had a lovely time and it shows through in his writing in the match report. Effusive, I think, is the right word.
You know how we always look for a team's results after they play Leeds, because they inevitably lose the next game. I'm going to be interested to see if George has anything left for the next Newcastle match report he attempts to write, or if it'll just be completely empty, bloodless prose. You've got nothing Why? To say about
Why?
This.
Why? Why?
You used it all on Leeds.
If you want to sign up for The Athletic and check that one out, theathletic.com/thesquareball, theathletic.com/thesquareball.
Theathletic.com/thesquareball.
Two away games to preview now. Final two away games of the season. One at Burnley, where the natives won't be present, but another one in Southampton, where hopefully they will, as the UK continues its unlocking post-COVID. Are you excited about these two games against two sides that have nothing to play for now? Burnley obviously secured their position by beating losers Fulham.
These absolute dead rubbers to finish off this season. I mean, I think we can make it fun still, can't we? There's been nothing to play for a while for us, and we're still making it entertaining, aren't we? So let's keep doing that.
And Marcelo would expect nothing less than full effort.
Well, he put it on the players after the Spurs game. He pointed out that even when there's not much to play for, they don't want to be criticised that they didn't. And I think his underlying point was that they didn't enjoy the reaction to the Brighton game, and they much prefer people saying nice things about them. So that's always a factor for footballers, according to Marcelo, is they want praise, so they'll go out there and try to get it.
Like a good dog.
Bamford will score in this game, incidentally, speaking of good dogs.
Well, we do, even though we beat them earlier in the season, we do owe them one, because they sort of had our number to a large extent at Elland Road, and if we're being truthful, were we a bit lucky to get away with that 1-0?
We were. We got an early penalty, didn't we? Which I believe they were still unhappy about, even though it was like a ridiculously reckless clattering on Pat Bamford, because I think Nick Pope got a toe on the ball, but then like the rest of his legs just enveloped Pat Bamford and slung him onto the ground.
I mean, in this era of calm analysis, it was an attempted murder, wasn't it?
It pretty much was.
I think we've got Sean Dyche on tape saying as much, haven't we?
There's nothing wrong with that. Fucking good challenge.
But I mean, Burnley, when you look at whoscored.com, one strength.
Aerial jewels.
Did you see their passing stats at Fulham? And bearing in mind they won 2-0, so they did the job that they needed to do, and they relegated Fulham and secured their own position. I think it was the lowest number of completed passes in the whole Premier League on Monday at Craven Cottage. It was something like 120 out of 250, something daft like that.
I mean, Chris Wood scored again last night, so that inevitably set off certain sections of Leeds United support on social media to say, oh, you know, should we bring him back? We need backup for Bamford. But I think if we did sign Chris Wood back, and he has scored a lot of goals for Burnley since he's gone, this is how we would have to play. There's no fitting him in as a like-for-like for Bamford. We have to change everything. And it's, what did you say it was?
Aerial jewels.
And that's it. That would be what we were doing from now on. So let's avoid that. Let's
long balls. Attempt crosses often. Control the game in the opposition's half. Attack through the middle. Take long shots. Take lots of shots.
That's their style of play.
Their weaknesses, they're very weak at, what's this? They're very
fuck
weak
off.
Well, apparently, they're weak at finishing scoring chances, keeping possession of the ball, protecting the lead, avoiding offside, and defending against attacks down the wings.
That's Charlie Taylor's responsibility, though, isn't it?
Very true. Do we still owe Charlie Taylor one?
Always.
He said sorry, hasn't he, I think?
Always.
For his refusal to play that time.
I think we accept that it was fine. It was Gary Monk being a bit of a twisty bitch.
It was a bit about, I don't know, Charlie Taylor's youthful stupidity and Gary Monk not being the kind of person
he hung him out to dry.
Talk him round. Yeah, we didn't need to know about it as much as we did. It was Monk decided to talk about it. But the important thing here is Bamford will score because of his beef with Sean Dyche, as is well known. And
well, he's got to secure his place in the Euro squad as well.
He's got to secure his place with England. And he always scores against Lancashire Milltowns, beginning with B. He loved it against Bolton and Blackburn. And he's going to rack up a few more in Burnley on Saturday just to stick it to the cloth cap, clog wearing, cotton spinning locals.
Oh, you could have finished that with the simpletons, but fair enough.
Well, I was starting to think about TB ridden children. I thought that was maybe going a bit too far.
We do know that they're likely to concede possession to us because that was the story of the first game, and they're not exactly set out to play an expansive footballing game, are they? But we seem to have been better in the second half of the season against these sides that sit deeper. The low block, I believe, like the cool kids call it, as we've said before.
I mean, we weren't against Brighton, so I don't know what you're basing this on.
Shit.
Oh, well.
There'll be fewer of them because Brighton had three centre-halves, whereas this lot, they've got Tchaikovsky and then...
Me is the other one, isn't he?
You.
That's Ben and me.
Yes, Bertie's son. So the two of them, I mean, they're both... Have they both played for England?
I'm not sure me has.
We've also got payback on Vidra. I'm just looking down the players. There's a bit of an issue there, isn't there? And not to mention the old football manager GFH thing about Ashley Barnes.
Still not as good as Luke Varney on there, is he?
Nope.
So still not worth signing. But yeah, I mean, look at Vidra, though. Three goals. Barnes, three goals. It's not great, is it?
It's not great. We're going to go there and win because we've got our tails up and we're Leeds United and we're better than this riffraff.
Oh, why have you said it?
Because it's true and we all feel it.
We're better than Brighton, though, as well, aren't we? But look what happened there. I don't know. I'm a bit concerned after the game earlier in the season because they did deserve something from that, as much as I don't like to say it. I feel like most games this season we have deserved what we've got out of them, and this was probably an exception.
I think we'll be fine against these. The Brighton aberration, as we were saying after that game, is something we've seen Leeds do before. We just throw those performances in now and then, and I don't expect it to happen again straight after beating Spurs.
I think we will score four goals against Burnley
and concede two. A Johnny Howson perfect hat trick.
I think at worst we concede one.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
On to Southampton then. Thoughts on this one? Fans back in the stadium. How will we cope with the intimidating atmosphere at the Dell or wherever it is?
Beat them 9-0. That happens to them sometimes, doesn't it? I know they've already had it this season, but we could do it again. I feel like they kind of gave up a very long time ago to Southampton, didn't they? They got all those points early in the season and then just went,
Do you see the tweet that went out on, I'm going to say, Monday? It was saying that Hasenhüttl has secured fewer points than Sheffield United in the second half of the season.
It's quite impressive.
It also reminds me of the other tweet I saw about Hasenhüttl, which was, I think it was, you know, when Southampton beat Liverpool, I believe it was, and there was that chap who tweeted saying, Ralph Hasenhüttl is the manager that Marcelo Bielsa thinks he is.
Yes, how is that going for them? I mean, by rights, they should be in a relegation battle now, shouldn't they, Southampton? It's just that everyone below them is so shit and has been so shit for so long that despite winning like about three games in the second half of the season, they are somehow fine.
I think they need a relegation battle. I think it would be good for them. I think they lack focus. They've drifted. That's why they've lost so many games. They need either a whisper of UEFA Conference League qualification possibility or a danger of relegation, because this life in the middle doesn't seem to suit Southampton at all.
It's exactly what happened to Burnley last year, didn't they? Finish 10th last year, and then this year they've been shit.
Is it last year? Is it every year? Just Sean Dyche, we didn't even mention, hasn't he been there for about 15 years now? It's just grinding on and on.
Nine, isn't it now, I think?
Imagine sitting down at the start of the season, all right, well, what are the target for this year?
What was that, sorry? What did he say? I couldn't hear that.
Let's see. The tape was scrambled. It's got wrapped around the Walkman heads. I'll just unwrap it, put a biro in to wind it backwards, get it straightened.
That's rewinding Sean Dyche, by the way, in case you couldn't tell.
And now I'll just
wasn't a seizure.
I'll press play and we can hear it properly.
15.
Christ, that was a long run up for quite a bad payoff.
Well, we haven't got much to say about Southampton, have we?
It's a long way away for a tea time kickoff, isn't it?
It's a relief that they are not allowing away fans into these games, because it would be an absolute piss take if our first match back was a fucking Tuesday night in Southampton.
We'd still fill it, wouldn't we?
Of course we would. I mean, we'd sell more tickets than Southampton if we were given the chance, but not to be. One last time on the telly.
And Southampton's strongest strength is shooting from direct free kicks.
Oh, I wonder what that's down to.
If that's it, really, just don't foul them.
Is that double-barreled kid?
Ward-Prowse, that's the one, yeah. He's quite good at them. But they're basically not that great at most things. Attacking set pieces, defending set pieces, all things we're really good at. So I'm sure it'll be absolutely fine. We have been better at defending set pieces recently, haven't we, actually? So it will probably be fine. I feel less worried about Southampton than Burnley, because I feel like Southampton really can't be arsed now. They're just waiting for a new manager.
You think?
Yeah. Like you say, they need a relegation battle. Get Alan Ball in and play Lattice. play COVID-riddled Matt Letizia.
Not sure about Alan Ball's availability at the moment. What about Laurie McMenemy?
I actually don't know. Dave Jones, he was at Southampton for a bit.
Let's move on.
He's popular with Leeds fans.
Let's move on. How do we do in this one?
Yeah, we can win this one.
Can we win them both? I think we'll win them both.
Yes.
I think we will win and our last three games of the Premier League season.
And when we beat Southampton, they'll have to hand over Che Adams as a thank you.
Will we use him or?
No, we don't need to.
Just chain him to a radiator or?
Whatever you fancy.
Maybe he can do the podcast when Bamford's not available.
6 points then from these, we're saying. Come on, Michael. Come on, you can do it.
3 points.
Who do we lose against?
Burnley.
Why?
Cos Burnley.
Aerial Jules.
Moscow.
We beat Burnley, and I like the sound of your 9-0 against Southampton. I think if we're both going for that.
Don't think that was mine. It was his. I think it's going to be 2-0 at Southampton.
I'm very confused. I was sure it was you. Anyway, somebody has said, well, if we all say 9-0, that's cumulatively 27-0. So let's go for that. Let's
you said,
go.
You said go really strange then.
Let's go for that.
So let's go for that.
Do Levi's do sports law? I think they should branch out into it the way that the football world's going at the minute.
There's money to be made in it.
Well, they do have branches across various parts of the country. Don't think they've got one in Derbyshire at the minute. Would need to check, but if not, might be worth opening one around the Pride Park area, because there'd be work there talking to the EFL disciplinary panel.
I mean, they've already bought the stadium once, so they probably don't need the conveyancing stage.
That's a fair point. And do you know what the best bit is? If Mel Morris and or Eric Alonso, whoever it is that's in charge of those jokers, goes to levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball, we'll get 10% off the legal fees.
It's worth having. Every penny counts for Derby.
This part of the show brings us to heroes and villains, the people who've done good and bad by us across the last 7 days. The Villain of the Week award first, the Ken Bates Villain of the Week award. And we open this out to our TSB Plus subscribers via the feedback form. Same one they use to give us feedback for propaganda. Tell us who's your hero, who's your villain for the week. Loads of nominations this week, and hundreds of people have responded as well. So thank you if you got in touch. If we don't read your name out, sorry.
Ryan Mason, the most popular.
If we tried to read every comment on Ryan Mason, we'd have another hour of material.
And an upset child on our hands.
I know, bless him. He kind of looked like a son of Keith Andrews or something with his curly hair on the sideline.
Well, the one thing we will read is definitely Manus's assessment, where he says, you guys are sort of around his age.
Nope.
I'm willing to go with that.
No, yep. I think I agree with that. And Michael has a much better coaching style, so we should be taking over. So, yeah.
He could be my stepson, if I'm married correctly.
Well, I suppose so.
If I went for a slightly older lady.
If anyone's willing to marry his mother, though, you could be 18, couldn't you? And he could be your stepson.
Yeah.
It depends on your taste. A 16-year-old Wayne Rooney would have been a lovely father to him at some point. But yeah, Andy Pugh pointing out that he's almost instant slide into a typical moaning manager is what he's nominated for. And it was, we didn't actually see him post-game, did we, live? But he did complain about VAR changing the game and all that sort of shit. And we just don't get that, do we? I wonder if it's changed us as fans to not have the sort of manager moan about things, because I don't feel like we talk about it as much as...
It means we're superior, Michael.
Yeah.
I mean, we needed no encouragement in that department anyway, but I like to think it's just reinforced our superiority, moral superiority.
There is something so totally broken about the way VAR works on offsides anyway that, you know, our reaction to Harry Kane's goal that he's whinging about was to say that goal should stand, and almost for the greater good of the game, and perhaps this is Marcelo Bielsa's influence, it would have been better if it had stood and we didn't have to discuss it and Mason didn't have to moan about it and all this. But because he's moaned about it so much, I'm now glad it got ruled out purely for that reason. So Marcelo Bielsa's influence on me has only gone so far. I'm still at heart a terrible person.
Adam Edwards did pick out his hair. Michael, have you got grievances around his hair?
I mean, it makes me glad I'm bald, to be honest. Seeing him.
I think you wear it well, though. I think you wear it really well. I think you look better as you do now than when you had hair.
Thank you very much. Well, I don't intend to grow it back anytime soon, so unless I could do go for the Glazer look.
There was a nod from Elliot in the direction of Mick McCarthy as well for not getting the memo about relegating Derby. Came very close, didn't we? And also the Derby fans and players for celebrating being dog shit all year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was people were saying, well, of course the fans are celebrating. They've just avoided relegation. That bit is fine, yeah. You do, no matter how much you might not have deserved it. If you stay up, you celebrate, and that's fine. It was the fact celebrating with the Derby players, like, I don't want to spend time with those people. If they've just served up one win in the last 15 games, dragging you into a completely avoidable relegation scrap, I'd never want to see them again, to be honest. But they're all like, oh, such heroes.
Yeah, I'm struggling with the whole winning mentality that Waghorn's talking about and living for days like this. No, this is the bare minimum you should be setting out to achieve as a footballer. Bare minimum.
Ant Mitchell saying, yeah, they should have hung their heads in shame, even if in private they celebrated. And that is it for the players.
It all came down to a final day. They had one job, beat Sheffield Wednesday, who, as a football club and a team, are a catastrophe. And they couldn't even do that. They didn't do the thing they had to do to stay up. Cardiff did it.
Stuff dreams are made of, Moscow. I think Mrs. Jackie Tits puts it really well. The whole Derby team for being a bunch of self-serving, out of touch, cringy, pathetic, overpaid, set of morally corrupt, shit-smelling, cheesy, ball-sacked twats.
With Martin Waghorn at the centre of it all, with his 3 goals in 31 games before that match, that's why they were in the shit.
Plenty of nominations as well for Cardiff, Marlon Pack, stroke Rotherham for ruining what would have been a perfect weekend.
And it was all there at one point. That was the worst bit, that Rotherham were in front for so long.
The gods of Rotherham.
And Sheffield Wednesday were in front as well, which would have been the absolute perfect outcome. But, you know, you can't have everything, can you? And what's nice is we can laugh from our lofty position at all these losers.
That's the thing. It was a side dish, wasn't it, on our beating of Spurs. It was just one of those things. It just capped it off nicely if it was there. But, you know, the main meal was still pretty good.
Others did set out to ruin our beating of Spurs. Namely, Jonathan Pearce took some pelters for his... It was lacklustre commentary, I think you can say, on Match of the Day. I mean, I presume, given how joined up the commentary is on Match of the Day, that it's added afterwards. It doesn't sound like it's in a stadium environment anyway. It felt like he was a bit down on us, particularly when he said that we were naive for defending against what was actually just a brilliant goal.
I've been slagging off Jonathan Pearce for years, quite rightly. So nothing.
And also praising yourself.
So nothing about what he said about our naive defending surprised me.
Darren Leatley saying, ready to label it naive defending as if 90% of football teams don't give away a couple of chances in every game. The pass for the Spurs goal was Ivan Edel clipping off Llorente. It just happens, doesn't it?
It was a very good goal.
It was a good through ball, which in truth was a bit lucky because it did hit a defender on the way through.
But then the way it was finished, spot on, and the way he'd seen the opportunity to run through, it was great attacking football. But the thing is, Jonathan Pearce can't just enjoy something like that. He can't say what an exciting goal that was by some outrageously talented forward players.
There has to be an angle, doesn't
it? The Hinchcliffe model.
Yeah.
There's always something wrong with that.
There has to be an angle, yeah. And Tom, I think, sums it up for all of us when he says, I wish he'd fuck off, back to Robot Wars. Other shit pundits who aren't Jonathan Pearce got singled out by a number of people. Matt Creighton. Oh, hang on a second. Robbie Savage on BT Sport said something along the lines of,
what a jolly hero he has done. Keep him up.
And then he goes on to suggest,
he might now stay at Derby, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot of good offers to Main Square.
Thanks, Robbie.
He didn't say that, but yeah, sort of hinting that now he's kept them up. It's still a good enough job for Wayne Rooney to have because they're a championship team. If he'd have relegated them, he would have had to leave because he would have soiled the place too badly for himself.
Jez has a pop at Jake Humphrey for his nonsensical tweet about the self-styled Big Six when it was actually him and his ilk who styled them. Yeah, it's the MSM, mainstream media, conspiracy, etc., etc.
There was quite a lot of hate for Rio Ferdinand as well, although I'm not actually sure he did anything wrong. I think people just don't like particularly yeah. seeing
it. Hey, listen, if there's one thing we can do, it's celebrate swivel-eyed bias.
I mean, obviously Moscow liked his more trophy-winning days after he left
at United.
When he was at United and yeah. He was really proud of some of the stuff he did there, but he did actually dispel the burnout myth, but people just don't want to see his face.
You keep harping on that, and there was a grand total of two nominations for me as a villain this week after all that. One, my scum-loving, as Chris said, and then the other one for mispronouncing Son from Elliot. So it's not cutting through, drop it.
Declan Gray also did criticise him for his fashion.
Me?
No, Rio Ferdinand.
Oh,
but I was going to bring this back to you, Moscow, and ask, what are you wearing right now?
I'm wearing a very nice jumper that's available from thesquareball.net.
But if you buy one
now,
merch
store.
You are psychotic because you are wearing a Christmas jumper.
It's a really nice jumper. I like this jumper.
It says Leeds Karaho
Ho Ho Ho. And then there's some snowflakes and stars and our little logo that Matt Clark did for us.
It is in burgundy, and it was a burgundy roll neck that attracted Declan's ire when it came to Rio Ferdinand and his overcoat that he wore over it.
It looks better on me, on my considerably more shapely lips. Well, that shut you up, didn't it?
And when it comes to swivel eye bias, I love this idea that everything is against Leeds because Joe is annoyed that BT Sport are showing adverts for the FA Cup. It seems to only be Leeds slip-ups in the FA Cup. I just love how we're excellent victims, aren't we?
It's just looking at everything on there going, oh, just can't believe it. Carney's done this.
Doing this too.
Carney and Humphrey, the haters. Is he Humphrey or Humphreys? I can never remember.
He's Jake. He'd love you to call him Jake.
Andrew and Ben both picked out Harry Kane. Just generally his face and his sense of entitlement.
That's fair enough. He didn't manage to dive though, did he, in this game, which must have been a disappointment for him. He likes to do that thing where he runs into the box and his legs go in opposite directions and somehow make contact with the defender.
Didn't really have the ball though, did he? You need to be near the ball for that to happen.
On the diving or falling over strategically line of thinking as well, a couple of nominations for Luke Ayling as well. No flop.
As he let the side down there.
We didn't notice Ayling much during the game actually, did we? He seemed to be fairly quiet. I did see some Spurs fans suggesting that because he was captain and ex-Arsenal, he'd be trying harder against them or something. But I mean, really?
Who's the most swivel-eyed lunatic out of all the fans?
Didn't ever play a game for Arsenal, did he? Or did he come off the
Champions League?
Yeah, he came off the bench, didn't he, once?
He loves telling people that he played in the Champions League.
Rob does ask specifically about Luke Ayling. He says, is this something he needs to work on in training, upping his flop output? Or perhaps it's just a symptom of burnout, which we all know is just waiting to kick in for this season.
It is, and other fullbacks can criticise as well. Alioski, normally excellent, but Mule says, can you make your mind up, be either brilliant or terrible? Seems fair enough. Some nominations for Tyler Roberts as well, Moscow, which I think is essentially a nomination of you. No end product and too many bad decisions.
It's very important to make sure we get that in after an incredible 3-1 win, the best performance, team performance under Marcelo Bielsa, probably in the 3 years he's been here. Good and necessary that we have to say Tyler Roberts doesn't have an end product.
Private first class William Hudson suggesting that Roberts is actually keeping his powder dry for West Brom in the final match of the season. Don't know if he's trying to play for a move there or just because it's his former club or what. Spurs fans did come in for a bit of attention too. Sofa Boy mentioned them. We dealt with them quite extensively over on Propaganda because they think they've got a stale squad.
Filled with dross.
Not a happy bunch, are they? Spursy. At Bamford, podcast Pat has been given a mention by Gary, because again, I mean, you won't mind at all, Moscow, because they're your favourite club, but he said United again.
It's like he doesn't listen to this podcast. Too busy making his own, isn't he?
And not of this parish, nearly was though. Ollie Watkins finally got his red card for diving, and also Dean Smith for having the balls to moan about it.
Dean Smith moans about referees more than anyone, doesn't he? And he moans about them even though he's in the Premier League by virtue of an absolutely ridiculous decision last year where someone had forgotten to switch on goal line technology, so maybe shut up about it. And also, Watkins did dive here. He did exactly the same thing he did against Bailey Peacock Farrell, where he fell into someone, and maybe there was contact as he went past him, but only because he jumped into it.
My favourite response to this comes from, well, just about every single Villa fan who rose to the bait. You can always time it. You know, the word Bamford will always be in that first response. What about Bamford?
At which point you say, yes, people. That time Bamford dived.
Yeah. And we all said, Bamford dived. That was shit. Don't do that again.
He even talked about it on one of his many public appearances at the Peter Crouch podcast, where he said it was not his finest moment, not something he should have done. He didn't realise how bad it was until he watched it back on the video and then realised that, yeah, it was indefensible. And he's not done it again, has he?
And strikers, players do try and buy penalties because they know they get given for minimal contact. Unfortunately, if you play with such fine margins, you are going to get caught out sometimes, especially when you go down as much as Watkins does, and he does. Yeah, I'm sure if we'd signed him at some point, he would have done it for us this season and we'd have all gone fine. But you've just got to accept it, I'm afraid.
And VAR is slightly to blame as well, because I think it's actually encouraged diving to a large extent, because if you can go down and you can draw the tiniest bit of contact, quite often they do still give them, don't they? So anyway, it was funny to see him get sent off.
And as much as we're bemoaning Dean Smith, it's funny to see him whinging, going, me, me, me.
It is tiring, though. I wish he was doing it in the Championship.
Come on, then, let's pick a Ken Bates villain of the week out of all those.
I feel like for the sheer volume of nominations, it should probably be Ryan Mason. And we're not going to get a chance to give him it again, are we?
No, this is true. He's not really done a right lot to offend us, apart from exist. So that's why he's getting the
Are you fine with upsetting a child?
He's 29, isn't he? He's going to have to grow up soon.
Same age as us.
He's my stepson. So he's a child to me.
Speak for thyself. He's mine and Michael's exact contemporary.
I will say this. It's the only thing he's going to win.
Yeah. He can have his villainous award.
The Andy Hughes Hero of the Week award, our second award, our happier award. Some nominations for people in this. Should we do our players first? Cock, Alioski, who else has been nominated? Let's have a look. Click, Jackie Harrison, Stewie Dallas, Bielsa himself, Melier, Rodrigo, Rafinha, and Strauch all made the cut here.
Everybody except Tyler Roberts.
And Luke Ayling. And Luke Ayling misses out as well, which is, you don't defend him quite as much, do you? Because you hate Luke Ayling, but presumably he's got far too consistent and has a really good output.
Well, I mean, Robin Koch is top of the list here. Who let Dele Alli go for both their goals?
Tyler Roberts.
Eh?
It was Tyler, wasn't it? Michael Hunter and Phil Robinson picked out Koch, just generally saying, excellent. And that ball to Rafinha was very, very good indeed. I like that. The move inside to receive the pass from Click, excellent.
I do quite like him in that position now. I think he's still not as good as Calvin, but I think we look much better with him there than when we've tried to play strike there.
And it gives you those options you get in a small Bielsa squad, because as we saw on Saturday and as we've seen for England, Calvin Phillips, and as we saw before Bielsa turned up, Calvin Phillips can play further forward in midfield. He doesn't always have to play in that position. We can bring Koch in there. We can have Strike there and he'll probably be okay. Dallas can play in the middle or left back, and if we do sign a new midfielder and a new left back, we suddenly, even though we'll still only have about 18, 19 players, it'll feel like we have a squad filled with options all over the place, and that would be good and nice.
Well, nominations for Alioski from Jimmy, Ben, Andy, Phil, Cy, Steve, Andrew, Rob, Al, Declan, Ender, Ant, Gary, Katie, and Scott White from the hills of Kentucky.
Andrew's saying it's hard to believe it was the same guy as the bizarre leg hugger from the Brighton game. He was great, and I think he was probably helped out to an extent by the fact that Bale couldn't be fucked tracking him. Because time and time again, he was poised on the left-hand side and there was no one there for him, so he was just able to run down the edge of, the edge of no one, because Bale was somewhere on the halfway line, presumably.
On to Click, then. Shut a lot of moaners up and got back to his old shithousery ways from Mule. Same sort of vibe from Matthew, just laughing at Aurier's pathetic acting skills as if he'd been blasted in the face by a bazooka, probably. Never mind a shotgun.
The club's TikTok account have made a thing of this as well, haven't they, Moscow? I know you're on there with the kids.
You and Ryan Mason. TikToking away, yes, whatever it is you do.
The youth wing over here. Yeah, it makes it absolutely clear. There's that little look across. And this is actually... It was one of the reassuring things about Click in this game after that worry against Brighton that, you know, is he...
He's what, finished.
Yeah.
He's finished. He's over.
Is he ever going to have a good game of football again? And the two things that made it right is that within 15 minutes of this game starting, there wasn't only this coming together with Aurier, but then he got absolutely clattered a minute later by one of the other Spurs players in what I think was kind of like a revenge mission. And there was some of this going on. So he's straight back in the midst of it. And then there were the shots over the bar, which is a true sign that nature is healing and Matches Click is back to where he was if the ball is being banged into the back of the cop.
Also on shots
to have him back.
For shots over the bar, Jackie did pretty well as well. But other than that, he got some nominations as well for just being...
It's the same reason, isn't it?
Incredibly
really?
Good.
Yeah, back to form, looking really good. Yeah, Philip and Ben picking him out. Fraser, Darren, Patrick and Andy all picked out Stewie Dallas. He gets it every week though, doesn't he? That's the problem. He's too good now.
Bored of him being good now. He needs to throw some bad games in. It's been 2 years. Stop it.
Melier got a nomination for a really accomplished performance from Sofa Boy Mick as well for that save.
He's a little bit like in the Stewart Dallas thing where he just every week is like, yeah, standard. Every week, Ilan Melier, world-class save. Yeah, whatever.
And he's asked to do, because of the way we play, he's asked to do a lot, actually.
It's going
to
annoy me as well when
he does it well.
He does next make a mistake, people will straight away go, need someone more experienced then, even though it'd be like one mistake in 20 games or something.
Although Kiko Casillas is there on hand to remind you that somebody more experienced is not necessarily the better option.
You've got another 8 mistakes before you get dropped, and you can make them all in the next 8 games if you want.
I think we've got a strong contender here, sorry, in Rodrigo, for that little eyebrow raise, which has now become a gift that is going to last for the ages in Leeds United world. I think this is a really, really, this is a front runner in my eyes for that gesture alone, for coming back the goal and his eyebrows.
It joins the lexicon with Click shushing the whole bench, doesn't it? And I was happy about his goal. And I think as part of that, Rafinha needs his hero nomination that Gear has given him. Firstly, for the massively exaggerated, oh, I'm definitely going to shoot, you better try and block the goal.
Hey, Eric Dyer, come over motion. Here. You picked out in the match ball, didn't you, actually?
Before passing it over to Rodrigo. But that pass to Rodrigo, who he's not had the easiest first season. He's gone so far as to say that, like, you know, he's never been a 20-goal-a-season striker and it's not his game and all that kind of stuff. And there was COVID and he's a long way from home. What he needed is a bit of a confidence booster. And the way Rafinha put the ball right onto his left foot, it wasn't a cross him. He didn't have to adjust his body. It wasn't made difficult for him in any way. It was like, that's the ball. That's the foot that you like kicking the football with. I'm going to put it right there. And then all you have to do is just kick it into the bottom corner. It could not have been made more simple for Rodrigo, which is not to take anything away from the finish. It's just to say Rafinha has really helped out a teammate who has been struggling for confidence by making everything just as simple and as easy as it could be. And watching Rafinha on the all the angles thing that they put on YouTube
goes on a long while, that.
It is a 6 minutes. First of all, because you get to see how many times Jackie beats their left back for the first goal. And it's almost like slow motion. It's so easy. There's so much time and space. But watch Rafinha's face as he's running through, so calm. There's just not even a flicker of expression that any of this is difficult for him whatsoever.
Mehdi and Dan both singled out Strauch for praise for containing Harry Kane, keeping him in his pocket. Yeah, absolutely. And Bielsa got some love from a lot of people, actually. Steve and Howard picking the same team, basically.
And from Mrs. Bielsa.
Oh, has she been on?
Going to Rick Hall's nomination.
Oh, she's been on. Great.
He saw them walking hand in hand. In fact, I won't say where, because people might stalk the area. He saw them somewhere walking hand in hand after the game and got a big smile and thumbs up when he said, well done on the game.
From both of them.
Which is nice.
Is crucial. Yeah, so it's...
A very clear indication, perhaps, that he's going to stay if his missus be able
to. Unless she's come to take him on. You, Marcelo, you've been away too long.
You said you'd be back by 3.
You might remember Sarah Ann from last week's show, where we attacked viciously Sarah Ann for stealing all the names. She pinched 2, and she's trying to pinch all the nominations here because she's saying everybody needs nominating, just about. Those boys in capital letters. Yeah, you're right, Sarah Ann. You are absolutely correct. And Brian says, the lads, unbeaten at home against the Super League 6, 50 points, fittest team in the league after 35 games. I adore these handsome bastards.
And it's a shame about the Arsenal result, so we'll ignore it. But against the top 5, as I like to call them, our second results were always better than the first. The Liverpool game, obviously, accepted. If that's the other exception to the rule. But no, we did better against them the second time around than we did the first time. And I think that's significant we've not got worse.
Jack and Ryan both pick out Sheffield Wednesday / Chancery for bringing us lots of entertainment. Ryan actually goes as far as saying that Chancery is an absolute legend. he's doing God's work. He's doing great. Sol Bamba gets a nomination from Elliot for his comeback in the final game of the season following his cancer diagnosis. Other nominations then for not on the field and otherwise got Mrs. Jackie Tits wants to praise the ground staff at Elland Road for getting the pitch in order. Again, I think the Sun's probably helped there a bit as well.
Yeah, but we can't give an award to the Sun.
Why?
It's a star. It's difficult. How would we get it there? Is it got a mantelpiece? It'll melt.
Well, Andy Dent wants the pitch to have it.
It's going to all get ripped up in a couple of weeks, isn't it? Poor thing. For all its hard work.
Tom picks out Sam Allardyce for the great job he's done as well. So let's pick a hero of the week out of all those. Loads of nominations. Who is it? Oh, I will add at this point, before we do pick it, loads of people nominated the ref / VAR. No.
It's still bad. I know it would have put them into the lead, but, you know. We were due one, though, I feel like. And also the dodgy penalty that Spurs got in the game at their place, where Alioski was clearly outside the box and they didn't seem to particularly even bother looking at that again. They just went, yeah, give him it anyway. So, yeah, it was nice that it evens up, but I'd rather it was evened up by actual dickheads in the middle of the pitch rather than a dickhead in a studio.
Weight of numbers in the nominations goes to Alioski. Weight of emotion goes to Mrs. Bielsa.
I mean, I guess thousands of people watched the game and concluded Alioski, and only one person saw Mrs. Bielsa walking around. So
I'm inclined to give it to Alioski this time.
Yeah, all right.
It's the redemption story, isn't it, from last week?
He is kind of, he's the emblem of the victory, isn't he? He's receiving it on behalf of the squad for this one, isn't he?
I can't wait for him to sign a 5-year deal next week and for everyone to absolutely despair.
But for now, he is our hero of the week and we will wrap up the show there. So thanks for sticking with us. We'll do it all again next week. Slightly messed up schedule because of the midweek game. They need to stop doing those. Their midweek games are beneath us now with Premier League, aren't they?
Unless it's in Europe, I'm not really bothered anymore.
Anyway, we'll catch you on the main weekly show next week. Look out for more propaganda, extra ball, match ball, the full shebang. It's all yours ad-free with TSB Plus. If you haven't signed up for that yet, have a look. thesquareball.net/plus, and we'll catch you in a bit. Bye-bye.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.